Before we go to questions, Mr. Shakespeare wants to make follow-up remarks.
I agree with so much of what Leopold said that it's difficult, Leopold, to comment on it except in a general way. Your point that the United States and the West really doesn't need a propaganda agency if it sticks to eternal truths, I think is right on the mark.
New
genius. Yeah, is right on the mark. Except that you need a certain sort of a physical apparatus to handle certain things. But to go to your point, it is the fundamental is to have your truths correct. Now, as to why some of the things were said to which you refer, you have to remember that a government in the United States is run from the top. If you have a policy of détente, and the policy is articulated by the chief of the government, then the agencies of the government do what they can to support that policy. Otherwise, you have anarchy. When the president of the United States goes to China, and in the final banquet in the Great Hall, he says that we, referring directly to the communist mainland, are on a long march together, and quotes from a book, the quotations of Chairman Mao, when at 60 days later you go to the Soviet Union and the final communique reads that we are embarked on a policy of peaceful coexistence, you're using terminology that sets a certain pattern because it plays into their hands rather than ours. But that's not the policy of an information agency. That's a policy that stems logically when you've made the basic decision as to whether you're going to relate to a foreign power through détente, that sort of thing. I toyed with the idea when I was going to talk here about saying in different words what you said about Carter. It seems to me that at least on the statements to date, the handling of the human rights matter, the handling of the first step in the SALT negotiation, from the point of view of principle, we ought to be proud as Americans. And I believe that conservatives should speak out in favor of those steps to date. I think we hesitate to do that because we're not sure where he's going, as you indicated. And because we're partisan and because we're distrustful of Wernicke and Brown and that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is we couldn't have wanted it any better in terms of human rights and in terms of negotiations and in what's been done and what's been set up to the present time. I think that's an important point. Now, insofar as Bill is concerned, Bill, in my remarks, I guess I didn't make one point clear about the communications revolution. And that is why it's causing all this problem. It really is causing. I don't genuinely believe I overestimate it. It's something that's changing the world. Now, we might not like that because it's a very damn uncomfortable thing to deal with. It doesn't mean that military power, basic spiritual truths, eternal truths, are not what the world takes account of. But it means that there's a new force loose that is something very different than any of us have ever dealt with before. Now, on the question of parliamentary democracy, which partly what I was relating to in the West, I guess I didn't make one point which I should have. Parliamentary democracies were designed essentially by the English in order to be debating societies. And debating societies require two things. They require time, and they require reasonable consensus. You've got to have time to consider things, to weigh things, to talk about things. And you don't pass laws until there is a reasonable consensus of the body politic. That's what a parliamentary democracy is all about. Now, the communications revolution runs directly athwart that. The communications revolution demands action now. Because for the first time, it hits hundreds of millions of people at the same time. It hits them viscerally. It hits them superficially. It hits them with all the color and power of television. It makes a point, and the people want action now, and it's supported by movies and records and magazines and travel and that sort of thing, and they want something done about it, and they want it done now. And it can't be done now under parliamentary democracy, and the whole West is having a hell of a problem with that. Now, I think that's a very fundamental problem. It's a very long question as to whether we'll work our way out of it or not. But that business that they say in England, England muddles through, or they say in the United States that Congress is stuck in glue, what that means is that you need time and consensus for a debating society. And I do believe that it is not coincidence that the Western governments in Western Europe and in Asia and in the United States are having Watergates and are having very, very grave difficulties in governing because there is an instability built in at the present time by the visceral force of the communications revolution. Finally, nationalism. I'm not a sociologist. I don't know whether nationalism is really related to the communications revolution. But it's got to mean something. When the most stable societies in the whole world, England and Canada, for heaven's sakes, are starting to be torn apart by nationalism. Why now? Why is that happening all over the world, in Africa, in Asia, and in the most stable societies of the West, Belgium? It is my personal conviction that that stems from this same sort of force that's coming out of communication. It may not be the sole force, but it's a consideration. And that's why I believe that even though it has lain dormant in the communist societies, it may not lay dormant very much longer. And we have never considered exploiting it, to use a sensitive word, in terms of the conduct of our foreign policy. Now we